This is Church Tech Profiles, episode 3 for the week of August 3rd, 2020, my interview with Todd Elliott. Well, welcome everybody to another edition of Church Tech Profiles. I'm Van Meschke, your host as usual, because I'm the only host of this podcast, so that's how it goes. But today, you know, it's funny, Todd Elliott, who is my guest. Hello, Todd.
Hello.
And I have done so many different podcasts now at this point with each other that, in fact, I just did the Philo podcast.
The Philo podcast, yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't know when that's coming out, but I think this one actually will come out before that one, but probably, we actually recorded that one before this one. Yeah. We were just talking and I thought, you know, Todd is such a good dude, and he actually wrote a book, which is terrifying to me because I've always wanted to write a book, but I'm like, that's a lot of words that I would actually have to write down.
Yes.
And I don't have any problem saying a lot of words, as all of you know who know me. I can talk a lot. But this is like 200 pages of words, and they're not small. It's not like really big, like big letters, and there's no and there's no graphics or pictures or anything.
So I'm like, think it's 55,000 words or something like that.
That's a lot of words to write down.
It's a lot. It is.
I thought, you know, transcription's gotten pretty good now.
Yeah.
I thought I could probably transcribe a book, but I don't know. We've always joked, Mike Sessler's always joked that he's going to take all the posts on Church Tech arts
and turn it into something,
make them into a book. And then what we were going to do is each chapter, my contribution would be, many of you who know me know that I've tried to keep my dad's sayings alive.
Okay.
And so even though they're old and sometimes people don't even understand what some of the words are in them, because they're like from the 30s and 40s and whatever, but my dad used to say them to me all the time. We were just going to name every chapter one of my dad's old sayings. So, but that hasn't happened yet. So, and Mike still may do that. I don't know. So, but anyway, I have the book in front of me. Your book is called "I Love Jesus, But I Hate Christmas."
Yeah.
And it's the subtitle is "Tackling the Challenges of Being a Church Technical Artist," and I love the title. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think pretty much every technical person has at least thought that phrase.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, so the story on the title, it's always been in the back of my mind, that title, and it was put there by a coworker of mine back in the early 2000s. We were doing some staff Christmas party, our church staff, and the youth department was responsible for the fun we were going to have. And so the fun we were having was they came up with book titles that people on staff had written, you know, just as jokes. And so there was somebody from the finance department had written a book, and, you know, children's ministry and all this stuff. And then they got to this one, which was "I Love Jesus, But I Hate Christmas" by Todd Elliott. And I still have a copy of that book. You know, they made a cover for it and, you know, just taped it on some other book. But it was always in the back of my mind, and I thought, I don't know if I can make a title of a book that. And then this came down to the wire. You know, it's like we're ready to send this off now to be made into something. What are we going to call it? And, you know, it's like, well, let me call that guy up who came with the, you know, who came up with it in the first place and see if it's okay. And then let's do it. So,
yeah, I think there was a guy that I used to be on staff with at Mariners, a pastor named Mike Erie, he's got a podcast out now, and really awesome guy. And I think he either wrote a book or he was going to write a book called "I Love Jesus, But I Hate the Church," or something like that. Uh-huh. He may have actually written that book, or maybe somebody else wrote that book. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it wasn't Mike Erie, but I remember having conversations with him about it, and it was always pretty funny to me. And I thought, yeah, you know, when you, and I, And I guess it's kind of this way, even if you are a hardcore volunteer. So you're a hardcore volunteer or you are a staff person. It is really easy to not like the big events, the big, the big tent pole events at church once you've done them a lot.
Yeah. I think it's if you're not careful, it's so easy to get lost in the big event and you miss kind of the process. You miss the reason you're doing it. You lose the vision for behind all this hard work. Yeah. And so, yeah, you just end up, you know, your family hates Christmas. I mean, I can't tell you how many Christmases, you know, Christmas Day, I would be useless.
Yeah.
Because I was so exhausted. And yeah, my whole family hates Christmas too, because I'm working too hard. Yeah. So it just, it felt like a very true statement. And it kind of encapsulates just the idea of the book, which is a lot of us need to pay a little more attention to our heart and the what's behind all this tech stuff that we're doing, instead of just doing it, and then burning ourselves out at the end of it.
Right. Well, so for those of you who, if you've listened to Church Tech Weekly, and if you've been listening to this podcast, in fact, the version one of this podcast that was like started like 10 years ago and went through a ton of episodes, I interviewed Todd. And at the time you were still the technical director at Willow Creek.
Yep. Yeah.
And then you called me up probably, I don't know, seems like a couple of weeks after that. And hey, you know, after we did the podcast, I thought, you know, somebody should interview you. You should actually be on your own podcast.
Right.
And I actually said, well, why don't you do it?
Yeah.
So there is actually an episode of Todd interviewing me.
That's right. I've been the host of this podcast.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So there you go. So and you're the only one that can say that besides me. So
there you go.
So there you go. So that's like, you need a plaque on your wall.
Yeah.
So that you can reflect on that for the rest of your life as a high point.
Yeah.
But one of the things that the reason I'm saying that is because I think that we have a lot of new listeners. That was
a while ago, 10 years
ago now.
I
don't even remember now how long it was, honestly. And those podcasts are not up on the interwebs anywhere.
Okay.
I don't think.
Okay.
I've thought about redoing like the vintage years or something,
sure, yeah.
You know, because what's funny is that Mike and I were talking about this not too long ago, that a large majority of the guests that we had that were technical directors are either not at that church that they were at when we interviewed them, or they're not even tech directors anymore. They're working for integrators, or they have companies like you know, that do events and do different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like so many of us, like almost, you know, me, Duke, Mike, and, Jeff Vandergeesen, Brian, I mean, we could name the giant list of people that are Marcus Hammond. We could name the giant list of people that are all work for integrators now.
Right.
But,
right.
So I just wanted to let you just tell the folks that may not know, like, kind of your story. I mean, most people know you because you're the founder of Philo Conferences, and that's what's been going on now. Which, folks, because at some point in time, we will be able to actually meet in person again.
Not soon enough.
Just so you know, if you find this podcast 10 years from now, just know that the whole COVID-19 pandemic was happening while we recorded this podcast. So events are...
Yeah, I was going to say Google the year 2020, and you'll find everything you need to know there. Yeah.
Unless in this Orwellian world that 2020 is literally stricken from history, like you can't find anything.
It's erased from the record.
Which, if you're living in 2020, you don't find that.
Yeah, that would be actually a nice thing, wouldn't it?
But you actually don't find it far-fetched. Like,
yeah, right. Yeah.
That they could erase an entire year. Not a problem.
Oh, my gosh.
But for those of you who are listening that don't know Todd very well, other than know that he is the founder of Philo and runs that, Todd, can you just kind of give a quick I don't even know if you can give it quick, but can you give kind of a history of how you got in tech, how you ended up as a church technical director, kind of your journey to this book?
Yeah. So, I mean, it is a very long meandering story, but for me, I was like the classic kid in high school that gravitated towards the gear, the, you know, in high school, figuring out, you know, why the film, well, I mean, you remember this, Van, the film projector would sort of do this warbling thing and you had to like figure out how to get it to, I don't even know what you call that, stop doing that. And, you know, so I was always the one kind of back there with the film projector, trying to get it to behave.
And the film projectors and the slide projectors.
Yep. Right. And the, like the, remember the one that had the tape deck built into it that would automatically advance the film strip. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Those are big time. Anyway, so I was that kid, and my parents were a part of starting a church, and so we met in a junior high band room, and I was part of the setup team, and just kind of slowly started, you know, one microphone, two microphones, a microphone and a guitar, you know, just kind of learning as the church grew, and I had a great experience there, and felt like, this is really cool. And I think I'm pretty good at this. Like people keep telling me, thank God you're back from vacation because you know, it all fell apart when you were gone. And you know, I'm just 15 or 16. I'm just like, well, whatever. Okay. I guess maybe I'm good at it. I don't know. It just, nothing seems to go bad when I'm here. So I don't know what you're talking about.
And in retrospect, that's kind of terrifying that everything was hinging on a 15-year-old kid.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think I mean, in hindsight, I think one of the things that was different about me and is maybe different about me is that in those situations where feedback is happening, let's say, I stay pretty relaxed and calm and just solve the problem. I don't freak out. I don't blow a gasket. I just, you know, solve the problem. And I think even as a 15-year-old, 16-year-old, that was true of me then. And anyway, I thought, well, this would be really cool if I could do this like for a job, but I didn't know anybody who was doing that. I mean, we're talking about the mid 80s. So not a whole lot of people doing it then. Anyway, I mean, I could stretch this out for a long time, but I ended up, this church started a church and I ended up volunteering there. I was part of the launch team. And then I ended up getting hired after I graduated from college doing audio, led the audio team. I did all kinds of things, was a semi truck driver with them we had three semi trailers full of stuff. I had a lot of struggles when I was there of just like, how do I do this? How do I, not only the tech stuff, but it feels like I'm fighting with my music director all the time. And, you know, I don't see eye to eye with the children's director and, you know, just problems. And so, I did something that you would never do now because you don't have to, but I called information and said, hey, can I have the number to Saddleback Church I need a big churches just so I could talk to their tech person and find out what's going on. And met some really great people that way and found out that my challenges were the same challenges that they were having. Maybe different scale, different, you know, the details were different, but started realizing that some of those, were universal. They weren't just me. They were, you know, we were all kind of struggling through those things. And so when I was at this church in Michigan where I was working, I started to sort of bank and file away kind of just ways of doing things or ways to think about things that would, help me, I'm going to say thrive, which I don't know that I love that word, but instead of, you know, being destroyed at Christmas time, just like, oh, if I did this with my music director, that would help how this is going and we could collaborate a little easier. Or with my volunteers, if I talk about what we do more often, then maybe we'll start working towards the same goal together instead of not. And, and then when I went to, and I didn't really write any of these down, I'd have to say they were just kind of in my brain. And then when I, another long, long story, ended up at Willow Creek in Chicago, I realized that all those things were the same there. Like the challenges, the struggles, we were all experiencing them even there. And it just made me realize again that just how universal the struggle is to be a tech person in the local church. It's not the easiest job in the world. And it's a lot, there's a lot more going on than how to EQ a mic or how to aim a light or, and all those things are important, but to really take the next step as a tech person in the local church, I needed to learn how to do some of these other things well. And I also felt like a little bit like it was the elephant in the room. Like, I don't get along with my worship pastor either. Let's talk about it and figure out what can we do differently? How can we relate with them differently? And so, yeah, I don't know that I ever felt like I was going to be a writer or that I wanted to write it all down. But again, another long, I'm full of long stories. I felt like there was a time. Well, go ahead. You're going to say
something. I was just going to say that's what this podcast is for.
Yeah. yeah. So the maybe I'll stretch this little bit out. I was in a, so maybe going back to 2006 or 2005, I'm working at Willow Creek, and I happened to be in a meeting once a week for 2 hours. And it felt like the meeting was about an hour and a half too long every week. And I just thought, I need to figure out some way of staying awake in this meeting. And so I opened a blank Word document, and the title of it became Titles of Chapters If I Ever Wrote a Book. And so I just started writing things down, and it made me look like I was paying attention in the meeting. But taking, pretty soon
taking
I was
notes.
Taking notes. Yeah. Taking notes in the meeting. And the reality was that it turned into, you know, pretty soon it was 2 pages, then it was 10 pages, then it was 20 pages, you know, just adding little things here and there. And, through a series of events, I felt, I mean, I've already said it. I'm pretty calm in tight situations, you know, when things are crumbling around, I stay pretty level-headed, which makes me, I think, a good technical director. But on another hand, I realize that I have very low expectations. I set the bar pretty low so that I'm usually pleasantly surprised when things go well, you know, just which in some ways is a defense mechanism for never being let down. And I felt like, you know, so I'm writing all this stuff about a book and then feeling like God really tapping me on the shoulder through a series of events saying, you need to start trusting me and just going for it, putting yourself out there and seeing what happens. And the reality is the result doesn't matter, but it's the faithfulness to take the step. And at that point, I thought, okay, that's great and all, but what does it mean? I mean, what are you asking me to step out in on? And it was, just felt that God was impressing me on this idea of a book. And so I thought, okay, to be obedient, I got to do this thing. So I just started writing in earnest. Again, this is 2005. And life gets in the way, and writing a book is really hard because you can't go back and explain yourself. It all has to be written down. And so writing out the perfect paragraph, it's like almost impossible. And so there you go. It took me 15 years to write it down to the point where it was a completed thing. But really the most everything we do with Philo is it's something that I need. I need community. I need to get better at my craft. I need to be inspired to keep going. That's a lot of what we do. And so for me, this book was just super helpful for me to write it down, to take the thing that's in my head and write it down. And over the years, to be able to then communicate it, to be able to look at a chapter and, or, you know, something I had written to say, hey, remember, you know, just change happens. That's one of the book titles, like this is how things go. And so to be able to talk to my volunteer team about like, hey, this is not new that change happens. So let's just dig in and, you know, do the best we can with what's in front of us. Whereas before I think it was just in my head, but I'm thinking it, but nobody else is because nobody's kind of calling us to that thing. So I feel like with, to fast forward then, you know, through the 15 years, starting Philo, I think the few churches that we started the first year, we were at several churches, and then we were at the Yellow Box Church in Naperville. And their resource center people would always be like, hey, any resources you want us to make available, any books or anything for your conference? And I thought, there aren't any. There is nothing really that fills that spot. And maybe I'm overstating it and I just don't know about them, but I didn't feel like there was anything like what has been written now. And yeah, so that was the kind of the last straw for me. It's like, finish the book, as painful as it can be, you know, keep writing the 55,000 words out. And yeah. And again, another thing that we're about at Philo is just, we want tech people to be more effective. I want to become more effective as a tech person in the local church so that our churches can be more effective, so that I can be the most effective version of the Christ follower that God made me to be. And I happen to be a tech person. That's what I want to be about. And so this is really just one more way to hopefully somebody will read this and, you know, maybe it means nothing to them, but maybe there's a couple nuggets in there that make somebody better at what they do as a tech person in the local church. So that's really the whole reason for doing it.
Well, one of the things about the structure of the book that I like that made me laugh, because, you know, I'm very ADD, but I'm not really OCD, except when I'm working, except when I'm a tech director. That's the odd thing, you know. I always
except when you're laying those cables down on the stage. Well, at 45,
it's really weird because I have a whole bunch of jokes about training people to do that, as we all do, I'm sure. But you know, one of the funny things is, when I'm in my personal life, my wife is the structured person. She's super structured. I mean, like on a wow level. Like, she's okay. If it's not a right angle, it's a wrong angle kind of a person. Right. So that's great. I mean, I love that about one of the many things I love about her is that thing. But I said, I'm not really an organized person, but when I'm at work, I have to be organized or I would get fired. I couldn't be a technical director if I wasn't super organized. Right.
Right.
So if you went into my office when I was a technical director, you'd go, this is Van, like all these lists right. on the wall and all this, like, I'm like, yeah, that's what you got to do. Right. So one of the ways I'm saying that is I love that you actually, at the beginning of the book, and we're not going to talk a lot about a deep dive into the content, because basically, folks, I want you to buy this book. It's on Amazon. Yeah, yeah. And we need to support Todd at all costs. You can buy it on the Philo website as well, right?
Yeah, so you can buy it. Well, if you go to our website, it kind of pushes you to Amazon. But if you want to buy it in bulk, so if you want to buy 10 or more copies for your team, that you do through our website. Yep. Yeah. And we have a discount there.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later again. Yep. So. But one of the things that's cool about at the front is, for all the OCD nerdy people, is you actually have a book structure.
Yeah.
Say, hey, yeah. This is what the book is about. And here's the structure of the book, so that your anxiety level can go down as you read it.
Yeah.
We all know that we get anxiety if we don't have a sheet in front of us that tells us what the show's going to be.
Yeah.
A little anxious. So.
That's funny. We should reformat that page to look more like a cue sheet or something.
Yeah, like Planning Center.
right. That's funny.
So I just thought that was really cool. And when I read it, I was like, oh, this is a run sheet. So we have a run sheet for the book, so everybody will feel comfortable about that.
Yeah. Like, yeah. For me, I felt like so there's four parts of the book, and I felt like each part is not necessarily for everyone. But I also felt like you can't have part four without part three, without part two, without part one. And so, just kind of maybe to lay it out there, the first part is all about redefining what it means to be a tech person. And for me, it's the term technical artist is the word I like to use. And so that if I'm an artist, what does that mean? That was a revelation to me. And in fact, just the last couple of days, I've been talking to the person from the book. We tell the story. We fought for weeks about what are we about as tech people in the local church? And he disagreed with me 100%, 110%. And so we duked it out. And the beautiful part is that on the other side of it, it changed my mind that I'm not just somebody serving someone else's ministry, but I'm co-ministering with people. If you're an artist on the stage, I'm adding my art to what we're doing. So that just that idea that we're all artists. And the second part is really just looking at foundational principles of how to do production. And so it doesn't matter how big your production is, how many people are in the audience. They're just things that we need to do our job well. We have to watch out for, you know, just the fact that we need to keep the stage neat. And just looking at some of the, you know, distraction-free environment, coming up with a plan B, how do you define excellence versus perfectionism? Just stuff that we need to know as tech people. And then the third part is really about, okay, now that I look at myself as an artist, I have foundational principles that I'm living out in the world of production. Now it's time to add those and in a collaborative relationship with our worship pastors, our creative directors, our senior pastors, just to, like, how can we together make something better than it was without? And I really feel like production done well is an art form, and we have the ability to make anything better and more effective by applying what we do and bring with other people. And then the last part is about leading a production team. So just some of the principles about leading volunteers and how to talk about mission and values and how to handle mistakes. And
yeah, very cool. So what was the hardest of the, so there's 40 chapters in the book.
Yeah.
Something for everybody.
Yeah.
And, but what of all the chapters was there, and maybe there wasn't, maybe they were all hard to write, but, I mean, I know they would be for me. Yeah. I can talk anybody's ear off, but actually writing my thoughts down is terrifying. Even though I've written tons of articles and stuff like that, but it's just, it's always a huge train wreck. And that is, it's basically a shotgun. And then, it's like an hour of just verbal, you know, just vomiting on the page, and then like 4 hours of editing it down to whatever it is they tell me I need to do. Right. It can only be 700 words. Okay. Well, there's 2000 words there. Okay. I've got to get it down to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny.
Of the 40 chapters, was there a particular chapter that you actually ended up either in the writing stage or the editing stage was the hardest one for you to get through?
Yeah. I think, it's hard to narrow it down to one. I mean, there's one, the very last chapter is called Lead Yourself, which was, it was hard to write because it was like holding a mirror up to my own life. And yeah, it's just hard to be convicted. And so that chapter really convicted me. But I think beyond that, the parts 2, 3, and 4 begin with a chapter about tenacity in that. So tenacity in the basics, tenacity in relationships, and tenacity to lead. And those were also hard to write because I know, you know, when life gets busy, it's easy to let go of some of those things, to not lead as well, to cut corners, to not be in relationship, but just get the task done. And so I think those were also hard to write because, yeah, I think I know I could do better. And in those respects, I think, I mean, doing production work is to do it well, it requires so much discipline to say, this is how we're going to do it. And we're not going to let go of it. Not to the point of, you know, destroying your life or whatever, but just that the to say, we're going to set the bar here and we're going to jump over it. We're not going to lower the bar. And I think, you take that to relationships and leading people. Yeah. It's real hard to keep up that. Keep the bar up there. So those were hard to write.
Well, it's like, when I was a Saddleback, Ken Robertson and I always had a joking phrase. It was, we set the bar so high, we can't jump over it. That was always like, you always had to keep that going, you know, but I'll never forget, you know, our friend, you and I's mutual friend, Dennis Choi, who was a tech director for many, many, many years.
Yeah.
you know, he always said, we have to bat 1,000 in tech ministry.
That's
the baseline.
Right. Yeah. It's a standard.
Is batting 1,000, you know, and that's you can destroy your life with that. And we've seen a lot of people do that. Did you find, is there any point in your life just to bounce out of the book for
sure,
a second?
Yeah.
And maybe it may be, you know, cause obviously, well, we'll get to what I was going to ask in a second, but, do you feel like there were times when you bumped up against that guardrail of this could actually really damage my life if I keep going down the road that I'm going down?
Yeah, I mean,
right now?
I think I've been fortunate that when I'm getting close to one of those, my wife has been really great about saying, "Hey, something's not right here, and so we need to like talk about this." And then if I felt like it goes back to my whole journey that with the content in the book and how it all affected my own life, was I felt like so often I was taking responsibility for too much, things that were not mine to hold. And when I started realizing that, oh, maybe I should ask if this is really how hard I should be working, or maybe I should just say, "Hey, I don't mind doing that, but this is what it's going to mean for me and my family and my team," or whatever. I feel like every time I got to that point and then I just was honest with my boss or the team asking something from me, I would say there was almost always some compromise that we could find that would make it doable. And yeah, that was another big revelation to me, that I'm like, oh, I don't need to just do whatever you ask, but I could say, "Oh, great idea. We can do that. But maybe if we did it this way or that way, or we spent a little extra money, we could do it in a doable way instead of just doing it with the resources we have now." I was going to say,
I think one of the things that you said to me years ago, which actually helped me a lot, is your pastor doesn't know you're driving yourself into the ground necessarily,
right? Yeah,
because
true.
He's not at the church at 2:00 in the morning when you're doing it.
Right.
And if you would just ask him,
"Yeah,
do you want me to be healthy? Do you want me to all this stuff?" 95% of pastors would go, "Well, yeah, that's, you know, whatever." And that was something that you told me a long time ago that was super helpful to me, that I realized that I think most people don't care about this thing that I've all of a sudden become obsessed about.
Yeah. And I think, so one of the big moments in my career, my life, was some midweek service. I was wrapping cables on stage and I saw my wife make a beeline for the senior pastor. You know, she's like walking with purpose. And, you know, while I'm on stage, I'm seeing this happen. And I'm thinking,
This is not good.
So I turned my back on, like I had to turn around and wrap cables facing upstage. And basically afterwards, she told me about the conversation, and she basically read the riot act to the senior pastor for how hard they were working me. And, you know, "You can't expect your people to work 7 days a week," or, you know, blah, 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 whatever she was saying. And the pastor did such a great job, just listened to her and received it. And at the end said, "You know what? No one's asking your husband to work this hard. And so if he needs to work less hard or have boundaries or whatever, he needs to be a man and say so." And so it put the onus on me to be the one to say, "Wow, you know, oh, I can't do that. Or I don't have enough time," or, you know, whatever the things needed to be for me to say. But it was not someone else's fault that I was working so hard and not seeing my family. It was my fault, and I need to do something about it. And I, years later, I was reading a book by Jack Welch, who used to be the CEO of GE. And he said something like, "Your boss wants you to live a balanced, healthy life, but your boss wants you to figure it out." It's not your boss's job to work it out, but they want that for you. Just you, it's your responsibility. So,
well, and because your leadership doesn't want to keep hiring technical people and technical directors.
Yeah.
They don't want to go through them like a sieve.
Right.
They want people to last.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think, yeah, so much. And I would say a lot of my perspective is coming from so many times wishing my situation were different or wishing somebody would act differently towards me or understand my world or whatever. And the reality is that it hasn't been happening yet. So maybe some of this is on me to figure out.
Right.
And so if I wish somebody would know me and my concerns, maybe I should know somebody else's concerns. Or if I wish somebody would take me out for lunch and try to get to know me, maybe I should take someone out to lunch and get to know them. You know, just so much of this, it's not all on us, but there's a huge chunk of this that's my responsibility to figure out. And yeah, no one else can do that but me for me and you for you.
Right. Yeah. One of the things that I like about the book is that it's interactive. It's not, and I don't want to say it like it's a workbook because it's not really a workbook.
Right.
It does have elements of that in it.
Yeah.
And so kind of what was your, you know, why did you decide to do that rather than just say, I'm just going to tell you what to do and here's my experiences. Yeah. And like so many books do, you know.
Yeah.
What was the decision of kind of having it be like that?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, the whole point of the book is to kind of push people towards becoming their most effective self. And so part of that to me felt like, well, if I could ask some questions at the end of every chapter about that topic that would help people kind of think about, oh yeah, what do I think about this? And then for me, it was also like, if I could walk through this book with my entire team and be able to say, you know, chapter 15 is about plan B. We're going to go over that, you know, before we start setting up. We'll read it together and then talk about the questions that at the end of that time, everybody's maybe not on the same page, but we've all talked about how important it is to have plan B and why we need to think that way. And so just for me, it was just a way of helping teams get on the same page about how do we think about what we're doing instead of just assuming everybody's on the same page.
Yeah. Because that's a big part of tech is that a lot of times everybody is not on the same page.
Yeah. I mean, to be able to say we do things this way and here is why, you know, I think, you know, there might be when you're talking about say lyrics on the screen, we do them this way. This is the font we use. This is how big it is. You know, that there are some of those things that we already do, but they're like from a technical perspective versus the book is more about your heart and just how you approach what we're doing. You know, we're approaching how you're doing lyrics, not the specifics of it, but what is your heart condition, while you're doing it.
Right. And not just uninstalling all the fonts off your Mac that you don't want people to accidentally use in ProPresenter.
I can't tell you how many times I threw away backgrounds, you know, just not, we're not using that again, not using that again. And then somehow like, wait a second, didn't I throw those in the trash? How did we get that background? That, yeah. It keeps showing up.
Yeah. It's like trying to make like the bass player telling you he didn't turn up I didn't turn up during the service. Okay. All right. Sure. Yeah. So one of the things that, you know, I mean, you've had such an extensive career. You've been doing this for what? I don't want to make you seem old. You're still younger than I am, but you know, so 30 some plus years of doing this.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
And, so in the book, how much do you feel like is you? Uh-huh. And how much do you feel like is, because you've gotten the opportunity to speak to so many people. And when you're the tech director of a big church, and certainly you were the tech director of one of, for many years, one of the most influential churches in America and maybe even the world.
Yeah.
Certainly when you were there.
Yeah.
So you got
to talk. Not because I was there.
No.
While I was there. Yeah.
Well, I, you know, I mean. I can guarantee you I've worked at two huge churches and I had very little to do to how influential they are. And by very little, I mean zero. So, but no, how, so, but you've just got to talk to so many people and,
yeah,
you know, tech folks always want, I mean, in my opinion, working at a big church doesn't mean you know everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But it does mean that people are gonna they have a guidepost in you. They go, well, right. I can talk to Todd because obviously he didn't get there because there was like some kind of clerical error or something like that. You know, I mean,
he actually had there's a reason.
There's a reason he has that he's there.
Yeah, yeah,
and you know, and to have longevity like you did at those churches.
Yeah,
so I mean, you can be anywhere for a year,
right? Yeah,
but, but 3 years, 5 years, you actually kind of have to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
So of all that, and speaking at so many conferences, and then ultimately starting Philo, and all the success of that, and talking to, I mean, I imagine you've talked to literally thousands of technical people in your lifetime.
That's crazy.
And so what of the book do you feel like is you, and what of the book is just the experience of others that you've talked to, commiserated with, you know, kind of all of that?
I would say, I guess I'll say both, which is not maybe the answer you were looking for, but I feel like when I look through the book and I just read through it, for the audiobook version. So I'm like, I remember, you know, remembering all these great moments as I'm reading.
I'm so happy about that. Cause I that, like audiobooks are like,
that's how I do reading. That's so
my thing. Yeah.
If I'm going to boil it all down real simple, everything in here I learned in the first 10 years of working at a church, so much of this I was learning and living out and stumbling upon when I was in Michigan. So all before I got to Willow Creek. When I got to Willow Creek, I realized all these things apply, you know, with nuance, at, you know, just a different church, but the only difference was scale. Like there's a few extra zeros behind whatever we're doing here at Willow than I was doing in Michigan. So much. And then, so that's one part. All of this is from my own experience. The other side of it is I feel like after talking to so many tech people from all over the world, this is our experience. This is what we're all dealing with. We all have different stories or different instances where something happened that made us, you know, hang on to something more. But I think these are all experiences that we all have. And so, yeah, I don't know. I was going to say there's a story in every chapter that, you know, just from my own life, but I don't know that I got that specific, but you know, just looking at some of these titles, you know, Wait 5 Minutes, Then Freak Out was one of my favorite chapters. That's totally me. I mean, I remember the moment that phrase popped into my head because I was saying, wait 5 minutes and then lose your brain. But until then, stay calm. So just so many of these things, were just things that I learned the hard way or just happened to stumble upon. I mean, there are a couple in here that other people instilled in me that I just then picked up and carried with me. But it's in the book because it's something that I believe deeply. I don't know. You probably know Marty O'Connor. So he was the technical director at Willow Creek through the late 80s, early 90s, maybe through mid 90s. And he was I wanted to be Marty O'Connor when I was younger. And I soon realized that, you know, the world only needs one Marty O'Connor. But so many of, not so many, but several of these in here, he were important to him. And because I was around him and learning from him, that I picked them up from him.
I like the Wait 5 minutes and Then Freak Out is something I picked up from another technical director of mine. He had a theater he was worked for a theater, and he had above the control room, because it was a theater, so there was actually a upstairs control room.
Right, right.
Big giant windows where the spotlights were and the lighting people and all that stuff. And it literally in giant letters, it says, there are no second chances in live theater.
Uh-huh.
And what that always meant to me was you just got to keep moving.
Right,
like,
right.
Like sometimes problems take care of themselves because, well, you're just on to the next song. And
yeah,
you just, you know, you just can't, you know, and honestly, really nobody remembers anything. I mean, the last worship song and the last 5 minutes of the pastor's message are really what people remember.
Yeah. 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 This particular phrase for me, we met in a high school, and there were a few times where the person with the keys to the building overslept, or, you know, we get there and we can't get in the building. And you know, I'm just watching my whole team lose it. How are we going to do church? Oh my gosh. This... And I'm just like, okay, I'm feeling that too, but it's not going to help anything right now. They're all looking to me about what we're going to do. And so come up with a plan and see what happens. And then, you know, so in that instance, okay, you three go that way around the building and try every door. The three of us will go this way and try every door, and hopefully we'll find one unlocked. Or the person who overslept shows up, or, you know, just like, and for me, almost without fail, within 5 minutes, everything would be resolved.
Yeah.
But I just realized my team needs me to hold it together. Somebody's got to hold it together. And so, right.
Well, and that's the thing of being the technical lead or the technical director or the production manager, whatever you call it at your church, is that if you're that person, these people, whether they're on staff or they're volunteers, they're looking to you. And yeah, they all immediately, one thing I've learned, what I learned from 10 years of being the tech director, was everybody, and then working for a tech director for 10 years before that, is that everybody looks at something happens, everybody looks at them. Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. How's he responding? Okay.
And just like Marty, my mentor was a guy named Ken Robertson, who was the technical director for Saddleback for many, many years, and Mariners. And I worked for him for 10 years. Uh-huh. And he shaped what a technical director is.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons that I am organized and I can stay calm in situations, which is not my general trait, is that he is the polar opposite of me.
Okay.
Never saw him sweat. Never raised his voice.
Yeah.
Never panicked.
Yeah.
Super organized. And you know, the only dumb thing that I ever saw him do was hire me and then keep me around for 10 years, you know? So, but I just always, you know, those things to me, I think, you know, they never, everybody's looking to you. Oh my gosh, what just happened? So I think that's a great chapter. One of the other chapters that I love is tenacity in relationships.
Yeah.
Because it made me think of tech people are hard nuts to crack sometimes.
Right. Sometimes.
You know, and you just got to know, you know, how to have relationships with all different kinds of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things I think is so great about this book is, you know, folks, if you are a technical director or even just a production manager or even if you're not paid, even if you're just a volunteer, but you're holding this whole ship in your hands every single week, which is in a large part of churches, there's one person doing that.
Well, yeah, yeah.
I not just because I love Todd and because I want him to be successful, but those are all true things. Mm-hmm. But you need to buy this book, and you need to get a bunch of copies for your team, and you need to walk through it with them. If you guys have a Bible study or a you know, that's what you do with your team or whatever, small group or whatever, which I hope you do. This is a great book to go through that with. And then dare I say, because I don't know if Todd will say it, but I will say it, you should buy copies of this for your leadership.
Oh, interesting.
And get them to read it. Because, and I will tell you this, I always made, whenever I would bring a new volunteer in, or especially somebody I was hiring, I made them read a book. It's called Heart of the Artist by Rory Nolan.
Yeah, good one.
Also a Willow Creek alum. He was a he was the worship pastor there for, man, I don't know how many years was he the worship
pastor.
Long time,
yeah.
And that book, because technical people and creative people, and that washes over each other, but technical people and creative people don't always, technical people that are super nerdy, they don't really always understand super creative people.
Right.
They think they're out of their minds most of the time. And I would always say, look, read this book and it will let you it will help you to understand how God has created the artist to do what they're doing. And I think it will help you manage your relationships with them a little bit better and not be so frustrated by them. I think this book will help leadership understand us better as technical artists.
Okay.
And I would even give it to musicians. Like if you have musicians that are there all the time, your worship pastor and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I would give it to them. Now, not throw it in their face like, well, you certainly don't understand me, so read this book and you'll make it better. But I think that it's a great insight into what we do, who we are, and everything. I mean, there's no other book like this right now. I'm going to say that right now. There's no, nobody's ever written a book that is like this, that talks about us. You know, there's other books that have been talked about technicians, but never the church. 'Cause I think the church technical experience is very different than,
oh my gosh,
anything else.
I have to say, so like I've been, it's hard to believe I'm going to say this. I've been gone from Willow Creek coming up on 6 years.
Wow.
And I can guarantee you that working at a church was way harder than doing production out in corporate America or being on tour or whatever. It's the dynamics of what's expected of you and the level of the time commitment, the level of excellence. It's it's just no comparison.
I would
that
agree.
Whole first in, last out thing, it's it might be true of somebody who does freelance production or whatever, but there's something about it in the church that it's way harder.
Well,
I'm trying to put my finger on it exactly. I mean,
I think you and I have talked about this. I think there's a spirit, you know, it's really funny. We're Christians. We work in church. We rarely talk about spiritual warfare.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I believe there is a spiritual warfare that happens in tech teams. I've seen it happen. You've seen it happen. I think anybody who's listening to this, if you think about it, there's been some things where you go, why is that person acting like that? There's no reason.
Right, right.
And I think sometimes it's a spiritual warfare moment, you know, that is happening. Yeah.
Well, I think the thing that's fascinating to me is that the body of Christ is made up of many parts. We're one of those parts. The creative people are another part. And for whatever reason, God decided for the season we live in now that the tech people and the people on stage have to work together right next to each other. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't be more different. And it feels very inefficient to me. but for whatever reason, that's the way God made it. And I think that distance that exists between the stage and the booth, it's physical, it's emotional, it's spiritual. And I think Satan uses that distance as a wedge to keep us as far apart from each other as he can.
Right.
And that feels weird to say, you know, I don't often talk that way. But I think it's so true that it's a lot easier to just not get along with your counterparts on the stage. But there's so much more. God has the ability to do so much more through us if we figure out how to bridge that gap.
Right.
So
Well, and the fact of the matter is that the enemy doesn't want us to bridge that gap.
Right.
He wants to drive a wedge between us. He wants us to have enmity between us. But the cool thing is we work for the side, the winning side. Right. So we work for the God who created all this stuff and who can help us to bridge so those true. Gaps and is trying to get us to get on the same page with him. I was talking to somebody the other day. I said, you know, the Bible's really only about like four or five things, but it took like all these books and millennia to teach it. And we're still trying to learn it.
Right. Right.
Because we're just thick skinned people, you know, and that's certainly true of technical people, you know? So, well, Todd, just parting shots. What's some words of encouragement that you could give our listeners just that are in the trenches that are doing this and all that?
Yeah. I would say, if you're listening to this podcast, chances are that you're a tech person in your local church. You're a volunteer. You're a staff person. You're the audio person. You're the video person. You're leading all of it. You're in many different roles and what you do is not easy. And it is hard, and you're not crazy that it feels like it. You wish it were easier. And for me, again, so much of this book is about just reminding each of us that we're not alone. That the things that I struggled with, you know, we all struggle with to some degree, and it's not bad, but there is hope. And so I would say, I don't remember where the verse comes from, but never grow tired of doing good. I think that's in Ephesians. Oh man, God doesn't want you to burn out. God doesn't want you to hate your life. He wants you to find your sweet spot and live in it and embody who he created you to be as a tech person. And on some level, whether you read this book or not, I just hope that you can hear that, receive it, start living it. Because I think it's so much easier to live the other way where you're frustrated and angry and anxious. And why is this so hard? It's hard because not everybody can do it. Otherwise, everybody would. But God has made you this way to do this, and he wants you to thrive at it. And, Jesus in John 10:10 talks about, I came that they might have life and life to the full. He's not talking about someone else. He's talking about you and me. Yep. And, I think for a long time I was resigned to the fact that, being a tech person in the church is hard, and that's why. Yeah, it is hard, but you still have the ability to live life to the full. And it's something that requires us to grasp hold of it. And I think it's within reach.
Well, I think that, if done right, if you rely on God, you can be very happy doing this and very fulfilled.
Yeah.
Even though that's not a guarantee that we'll be happy in the Christian life at all.
Right.
We're certainly learning that at this point in history. I just remember what both you and I's good friend, Andrew Stone, he used to say about his job at Church on the Move. He always used to say, it's the hardest job I've ever loved.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was such a cool perspective that he had about working in the church. Cool. Todd, as always, you and I could talk for hours and hours and will. I appreciate you being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I wish you a ton of success with this book. Talk a little bit about, because I'm going to post this pretty much right away. I'm going to post it on Monday. We're recording this on Friday. I'm going to post it on Monday.
Okay, it's Friday.
The people can hear the back end. They understand this.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what's been going on with Philo and kind of having to readjust. I will say this, the Philo that, when was Virtual Philo Chicago?
May 19th and 20th.
Now, was that May? Wow. So yeah.
2 months ago, 3 months
ago.
It
feels like it was 10 years ago already. Yeah. Right?
It's so true.
It's so weird. No, there is no time. Time has lost all meaning.
Oh my gosh.
But if you guys, are those resources available to people that maybe didn't get to go?
Yep. So if you, you can go to our website, phylo.org. There's a resource page. Everything that was shown, I think, minus maybe the worship and a couple of the creative elements during main sessions, but all the talks, all the breakouts, everything's available on our website, phylo.org. Actually, since you told me you're posting this on Monday, we are hosting a Spanish version of Philo.
Yeah, good. I wanted you to talk about that.
Yeah, so we have some friends in the Dominican Republic and in Dallas. The one in Dallas is at Lake Point Church, runs their Spanish speaking congregation. Anyway, they approached us and said, hey, we'd love to kind of repurpose some of this material. And so we've been furiously adding Spanish subtitles and overdubbing some things and creating new content in Spanish. And so, our hair is basically on fire to do this. But we actually just now, we originally were going to be on August 21st and 22nd. We have changed our dates to be just a couple weeks later so that we can get all the stuff done 4th and 5th of September. So it's Labor Day weekend, which I think is less of an issue in Latin America than, you know, I know that's Labor Day weekend in the US, but will be, we'll do a little bit on Friday and a little bit on Saturday morning. But we're, like I said, rebroadcasting some stuff that we showed at Philo 2020 with Spanish subtitles, and some of it is all new. And we're doing our best to.
That's awesome. I think
we bit off more than we could chew, but we're doing it. And
that's amazing.
Such a huge percentage of the world speaks Spanish, and there's a lot of churches trying to do great work. And would love to. Yeah, we're just again trying to help the tech person become more effective, so their church can effectively do the ministry that God's called them to. So, September 4th and 5th, Spanish, Philo 2020 in Espanol.
Which is awesome. So if you have a Spanish ministry in your church, if you have, if you're bilingual and you're involved in those things, or you know folks that are in other countries that speak Spanish that are trying to do tech in church, please send them that link, get them involved in that. It is so worth it. Philo is just one of the greatest conferences that's going on right now. We are very blessed to have been involved in it, well, pretty much from from the start.
And
we'll continue to do so, but we just love it. The Philo Chicago, the virtual, it's really funny. Like on a weird side note, not to pat you on the back too much, but I was just literally listening to something this morning about how Comic-Con, virtual Comic-Con, they called it Comic-Con at home, has been a disaster for them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like it was like they only got 95% social media action than they usually do.
Wow.
It was really, of course, it's Hollywood, so everything's blown way out of proportion, of course. Right. It's either a blockbuster success or it's the worst thing that's ever happened to them.
Yeah.
Right. There's no middle. There's it was fine. There's none of that in Hollywood. So, but I'm saying that to just go, wow. Yeah. Okay. So Comic-Con is really a thing you have to be at.
Right. Right.
Right. Cause half of it is the cosplayers and the people dressing up and people meeting people face to face and all this stuff. But I say that to say this, Philo virtual to me was a huge success for the amount of time you guys had to put it together and move it to online, and just the interaction that I had with people, getting to teach a class, getting to have a virtual trade show booth, and we had great interaction on that. We just had a great interaction with people, had a lot of great conversations. It was a blast. One of the fun things for Duke and I was to be able to teach a class because it was pre-recorded. We could be in the chat room and answering questions the entire time. And you never get to do that when you're actually teaching a class.
It was actually, I think, one of the best parts about Philo was that ability for the teacher to interact during their breakout with you know, answering questions and stuff.
It was awesome. Just awesome. So just so we can verify that it was a success, if you haven't heard, what were the numbers of the virtual Philo?
Yeah. So we had 2,300 or just shy, like by 10 or something, 2,300 attendance, which I would say the year before we were at 1,600 when we were in person. So yeah, it was like, and we had about 600 of those people were from around the world, which was kind of a new experience because it was online. We could have people from Europe and Asia, and yeah, that was so much fun to see all those people in the chat room to say, hey, you know, signing in from Brazil. Just so cool. But yeah, great. I mean, it turned out way better than I could have hoped or imagined. And yeah, the Philo team just crushed it big time.
Yeah. And you guys had a great backend company helping you guys out. They did a phenomenal job. We were blown away. What was the name of it? What's the name?
Sardius.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, and I want to say that because like, if your church has a big conference or something like that, it's worth at least talking to Sardius because these folks like killed the back end of this thing.
Yeah, they did. And they did not, we asked for a lot without knowing that's what we were doing. And they said, yep, we can do it. Yes, we can do it. They never said, oh my, that's like more than we've ever done. And after it was over, I just said, can you confess to me that this is the biggest, you've never done it this way before or whatever. And they're like, yeah, we had no idea. We'd never done it. We'd never done this before. And the beauty is that they then went on to help with the back end of the Thrive conference, which was, I don't know, 100,000 attendees or 120,000 attendees.
Right.
Yeah. From the things they learned from our event, they were able to repurpose there. So,
yeah. So it was really cool. And you guys acted like you'd been doing it all along.
I have to say, just before I forget, going back to kind of the history of Philo and CCI Solutions being a part of it, it just popped into my head that I think it was our third Philo. So we did four one-day events in 2015, and one of them was in Seattle.
Yep.
And at Overlake Church, Mark Breida was the TD back then.
Yep.
But Duke DeYoung, he ran sound. He was the audio engineer for that Philo.
So that's how long we've been around.
Yeah, yeah. He secretly was involved because I think we were sponsored by a competitor at the time. Right, yeah. So it's like I'm wearing my civilian clothes. I'm just mixing audio.
Well, first and foremost, you know, that's like this podcast. I try not to talk about who I work for and all that kind of stuff because it's really not about that. It's about helping people do
for sure. Better.
And I mean, if people want to talk to me, they know who I work for. They can call me.
Right, right.
I mean, they can email me, whatever. It's fine. And Duke is the same way. And all of us. And I will say this is you will rarely hear me compliment our competitors, but there's so many people in the integration world
that
came from being church technical directors. And all the ones that I know, for the most part, love to help the church.
Yeah.
And first and foremost, one of the reasons they do this is to help the church.
Right.
And so that's all I'll say about that. But anyway, I remember back in the day, the very last Gurus of Tech.
Okay.
Mike and I did a bunch of live podcasts.
Oh, right. Sure.
Gurus of Tech. And, we had some great, those were some great podcasts that we did.
I think I met Daniel Cannell in the podcast booth. You know, just the table seating, like we met holding microphones.
Well, we did like Teradek helped us to do a live broadcast kind of a thing. It was a nightmare because that was back, you know, compared to how easy it is to do stuff now.
Right. That was 2013. So that was a while ago.
It was hilarious because we were just kind of, and we were just grabbing people. I mean, I remember Chris Gilley. It's one of the very few times Chris Gilley was on a podcast that you would actually hear his voice on a podcast.
Right. Yeah.
Because he literally is the most shy person when it comes to that stuff ever. For I literally had to drag him to the mic, right?
Wow. And
so it's just pretty funny because there's just so many people that I loved, we loved talking to that we didn't get to talk to, except for, you know, that, like, you know,
kind of a dragging them over,
just to bring them over and get them to talk and, you know, and different stuff like that. So, we've been, we feel like we've been around hanging out with you guys for a long time and we want to continue to do that. But anyway, Todd, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thanks so much
really
for having
appreciate
me.
Appreciate it. Once again, the book, it is called I Love Jesus, But I Hate Christmas, Tackling the Challenges of Being a Church Technical Artist by Todd Elliott, by W. Todd Elliott.
That's right.
And we will not talk about what the W means.
It's a mystery. Yeah.
It's a mystery. It's one of those mystery things. But you can get it on Amazon. You can get it on the philo.org website. If you want any Philo, there's philo.org has tons of resources. So please go there. It's just a wealth of knowledge. I encourage you to go to Philo, just check out all the Philo resources from the Chicago one that was online. It was really, really good. It's awesome. So many great folks were involved in it. And the bummer is there's not going to be a Philo SoCal this year, which is kind of a bummer for us, but especially for me, because I'm in SoCal.
Yeah, you're right there.
I'm right here. But
We're still trying on that note. We're still trying to figure out what exactly we're going to do instead. So we're still,
but hopefully,
The 2021.
Hopefully, 2021 will be the year, the comeback year, and we'll get to all see each other again.
That'd be nice.
But I would just say this: to continue to be encouraged if you're a tech person in a church right now, because I know you, Todd and I were talking about this before. We've talked to so many people that everybody is working. The technical people in the church are working so hard right now.
Harder than ever. Yeah.
Harder than if we even thought that was possible. So take care of yourself. Let your leadership know that when things aren't sustainable, don't be a martyr. This is not a time to be a hero. This is time for longevity, sustainability, you know.
So good.
So Todd, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This isn't the last time we're gonna talk, obviously. So
Folks,
thanks for listening. We'll have another podcast up in a week, next week. And I thought I was only going to do these bi-weekly, but I've actually been putting them up more on the weekly basis, because I've gotten a lot of people that want to be on the podcast, and that's fantastic.
Nice.
I'm really glad about that. And we're also going to post some stuff that Duke and I did, some other interviews and different stuff like that. And I'm still trying to have a roundtable discussion every once in a while where we'll kind of do a sort of Church Tech Weekly-ish kind of a podcast on this every once in a while.
Okay.
I don't know if we're going to start that as a separate podcast or just one of these. It'll happen every once in a while. So I'm sure Todd will be back on one of those at some point. But anyway, thank you guys for listening. Church Tech people, be encouraged. Appreciate it. And we will talk to you all later. Have a great week.